The Sewers of Paris is independent, ad-free, and listener-supported. Head over to patreon.com/mattbaum to join the folks who make the show possible and to check out the rewards for backers. Hello and welcome to The Sewers of Paris. What unexpected superhero powers might you possess? My guest this week was inspired by Wonder Woman to become one of the world's foremost experts on wastewater. And yes, I promise, that'll all make sense once you hear it. Raul Pacheco Vega has been obsessed with women superheroes his whole life, an obsession his parents indulged by enrolling him in martial arts classes, perhaps knowing that their young gay kid might need to defend himself at some point. But heroism came in an unlikely form, lending his keen engineer's mind to solve problems once thought unsolvable. We'll have that in a minute. First, a quick thanks to everyone who supports The Sewers of Paris on Patreon, including this week's newest members, Alfred, Carolyn, and Happy Ninja 42. Head over to sewersofparis.com and click Support the Show on Patreon to join the folks who make the show possible, and check out rewards like exclusive video messages from me, a care package in the mail with Sewers of Paris buttons, and more. And I hope you'll join us for our next fun-friendly live stream on November 7th at 11 a.m. Pacific. It's a nice, relaxing time to just hang out and chat. There's a link at the top of The Sewers of Paris Twitter feed. And if you like hearing about queer entertainment, check out my YouTube series Culture Cruise for dozens of deep dives into the LGBTQ moments on TV and film that changed the world. Now, here's Raul. Well, this week I'm speaking with Raul Pacheco Vega. He's associate professor with the Lab Methods at the Latin American Faculty for Social Sciences in Mexico. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you so much, Matt, for inviting me.
So what is the entertainment that changed your life?
Wonder Woman, absolutely. I think this is as gay as it comes. I mean, I love entertainment and I've always loved Superman and Batman. But for some reason, I always thought that Wonder Woman had the best powers, the best costumes. Like it was a bizarre. Plus, you know, the invisible jet. It was like, you know, and then the loss of truth and the bracelets that are, make her like bulletproof. So it was a really interesting. Also, I studied when I was, you know, younger, I studied Greek mythology. So I was, you know, very interested in the entire concept of Amazons. And this is funny. I mean, even before getting involved with, you know, any kind of feminist movement, I always wondered how was it that there was Amazons, but not male Amazons, right? But, you know, Amazons, in fact, actually fought oppression and they fought, you know, the male gaze and the male control. So it was really interesting to think, well, you know, what would have happened if Wonder Woman had decided to fall in love with a man as she did with Steve Trevor and then, you know, have a daughter or whatever, right? Like what is that person, right? Like that person, is that an Amazon or a half Amazon or a demi Amazon? So all of these questions plagued me when I was a child, which is really absurd.
So tell me about like discovering Wonder Woman. How did you, like, did you watch the show or read the comics or how is she a part of your life?
So I read the comics. It's really funny because I read the comics. If you actually look at the scholarly literature, there are actually, you know, scholarly journals and books about Wonder Woman and about Richard Marston, the creator, and how, you know, he actually also worked on the lie detector and like all of those things. But yeah, one fun day I started following, you know, comics when I was a child, and then I discovered the comic of Wonder Woman. And again, it just made so much sense with everything that I had studied about Greek mythology. I mean, Batman doesn't really make sense because, you know, he's a millionaire and, you know, his parents get killed. But here was a young girl who was made out of clay, and then, you know, the gods, particularly the goddess of love, Aphrodite, allowed her to actually have a daughter, to allow Hippolyta, the queen of Amazon. So all these, you know, mystic approach to understanding the mythology of Wonder Woman just attracted me to her, right? Like it was like, oh, wow. So actually she basically slapped Ares in his face. So it was funny to just see the mythology, the Greek mythology, you know, blended with the idea of the Amazons and the idea of a very powerful Amazon who was out there for love.
When you were a kid and reading the comics, were you collecting them? Like right now you have like Wonder Woman, like toys around you, but like, were you a collector back then?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Which was really difficult because I've lived, you know, in Canada, Mexico, France, Spain. So moving all my collections has been so difficult. So I basically had to...
Why were you moving so much?
So I did my undergrad in Mexico, then I did my master's in the UK at University of Manchester, and then I did my PhD, my doctorate degree at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. But my parents lived in Mexico, so I had to come back. And then my mom, when she was older, she decided to do her PhD at about the same time as I did, so I moved with her while she was studying her PhD in Spain, in Madrid, at the Complutense de Madrid. And then last year, I did my sabbatical at Sorbonne Nouvelle at Paris 3 at the Institute of Études de Mexique Latine, at the Institute for High Studies of Latin America. So I've lived in several countries, and that means that I don't get to, you know, bring everything, right? So my collection of boxes and boxes and boxes of comics has become reduced to like to be and only like, you know, 6 to 10, possibly 20.
So, you really have to prioritize.
Yeah, I had to prioritize. It's really hard. It's super, super hard.
What were the, do you have books that have just been like with you going back to your childhood?
I think I do. And I have like what, the origin of Wonder Girl, right? Like, you know, then I have her marriage. She gets married to, his first name is Terry, and I forget his last name. Jesus Christ, I can remember. But she gets married, so Hippolyta gets a special permission to leave Paradise Island, Themyscira, and then she comes to the wedding. And it's beautiful, right? Like, the goddesses are there, and she's able to come to the wedding, so... It was nice. It was just so beautiful to see, you know, Wonder Girl. And then there's also the other story, right? Like, you know, the death of Wonder Girl and then the emergence of her new identity, Troya. So, I've kept a few. I've kept, you know, some new versions, like, you know, of the comics. So one where actually Batwoman and Batman get married, and instead of, you know, Selina Kyle and Bruce Wayne, he gets married to Kathy Kane, and they face, like, you know, a huge threat. So it's been interesting to see, you know, how my comics have changed.
All that traveling that you're doing for your academic career, what were you actually studying? Was it connected to, you said you'd studied Greek myths when you were younger?
So I've never actually studied Greek mythology, but it's interesting that you ask that, because when I was a child, I was always interested in like fixing the world. And one way to do it is obviously through superheroes, right? The other one is you becoming a superhero, right? So I decided that I was going to fix pollution in the world. And that's why I decided to become a chemical engineer, and then why my PhD is in political science and human geography. I'm a combined human geographer and political scientist who looks at problems of pollution, particularly water pollution and water use. But I also study solid pollution, solid waste, and then I have also done some work on climate change and climate politics. And lately, I've been doing a lot of work on the politics of bottled water. Why and how do people bottle water? And this is interesting because most superheroes and most superhero storylines you will find at some point have an environmental story. Right. So it wasn't so much the Greek mythology, but just, you know, me wanting to be a superhero. I still have that complex, to be quite honest. I work stupidly insane hours because of that, because I do believe that there is a place and a space for, you know, young kids and up and comers. And there's one way to convince them that it is important to do environmental politics and environmental policy as well, is by convincing them that they will be the superheroes of our planet.
What was it that got you into that initially? Like, there's so many things when you talk about, like, being a superhero and saving the world. You know, there's so many public health or criminal justice or, you know, I don't know, wildlife conservation. What was it about managing or the way that people manage resources and deal with waste that interested you?
I don't know. It was just interesting. I would say, like, I would literally walk around, like, this is like 600 years old, and I would walk around and be like, why cannot we recycle all this trash, right? Like, I would be, you know, visiting landfills and you know, polluted plants and so on when I was a child, you know, for schoolwork, right? Like, you know, for our field trips. But then it just became my passion, and remains my passion. I'm still, I mean, I do a lot of work with water insecurity, right? Like how people are or are given or denied the right to access water. But now I do a lot more work also on waste and solid waste and liquid waste, right? Like, you know, once you flush the toilet, nobody really thinks about water. And this is very complicated, because then what that means is that you are, all this pollution is being accumulated. Also, if you think about, you know, liquid waste, think about this. More than a billion people do not have access to the dignity of a toilet, right? These are, so there are more people who have cell phones than they do toilets. And this means that there is a huge degree of toilet insecurity, right? How is it that we have not solved the problem of toilet insecurity? And how can we improve access to sanitation, access to, you know, the dignity of a toilet? But also, you know, how can we treat water and increase accessibility? That is also super important to me.
I mean, what you're describing sounds like a, I guess, sort of a shade of the sort of work that superheroes do in that, you know, I'm thinking about like Superman, for example, who is looking at humanity or Batman. And you see like these problems that arise as a result of just human societies. In their case, it's often crime. But, you know, when you have a certain concentration of people, then there are these problems that emerge and they don't have simple solutions.
Absolutely. What's interesting, and I have followed everyone. Like, so I was a Superman, Batman, Aquaman, Wonder Girl, Wonder Woman, Flash follower. But what you're mentioning really brings, like, it really nails the head. It's so important to think about the different ways in which problems are tackled by superheroes, right? Like, you know, in a way, Batman knows that he has no superpowers, but the way in which he tackles, you know, social problems is by releasing his anger, right? Like, whereas Wonder Woman, and this is something I should confess, this is not an original sociological idea of mine. This is an idea that actually was discussed in the show, in Titans, where, you know, Wonder Girl, Donna Troy comes to Dick Grayson, Robin, and visits him. Like, they're, you know, in their early 20s, and he's like, you know, actually, it's all the way around. He comes and looks for her, and then, you know, she says, you know, Wonder Woman was created to protect the innocent, and Batman was created to punish the guilty. And we, you know, Wonder Girl and Robin are neither one of them. So each one of them was able to create their own story. That's also very true in the way I think about superheroes, right? Like, you know, Batman is releasing his anger and he's basically punishing people, whereas Wonder Woman is saving people, very much along the lines of what Superman and Supergirl are tasked to do. A lot of the superheroes, and I love it in the way that I look at it as my work. There's a scene in the show Birds of Prey. I don't know if you ever watched it.
I haven't seen it.
It's a beautiful show that has now been remade into a movie. It's a show about the daughter of Batman and Catwoman, the Huntress. And in the show, she's a metahuman. So she has, you know, cat-like superpowers and so on. Then there's the daughter of Black Canary, Dinah, who has telepathy and she can manipulate people's emotions. And then there's Batgirl, who has been paralyzed by a bullet that the Joker put into her spine. So she becomes Oracle, this computer wizard. And in that show, Oracle decides to tackle Lady Shiva, an old enemy of hers, without consulting with Huntress and without consulting with Dinah. And then what happens is that she is obviously she uses a contraption that allows her to walk, but hurts her a lot. And then she puts on, she dons again the costume, and then she says, she tackles Lady Shiva, but Shiva beats her really easily because she's no longer, Batgirl, right? She is, paralyzed now, using a contraption to walk very tentatively. So what ended up happening in the show is, at the end, she hangs the cape again and she talks with Alfred, the former butler of Batman, and says, Alfred, I'm not the superhero I once was. And then Alfred responds to Barbara and says, you have grown into a beautiful young woman who has the capacity to love and the capacity to think for herself. That if that's not a superhero, then what is? That hit me, that scene really hit me in the feels, because I was very ill I have been very ill for the last year. I had psoriasis and chronic pain and chronic fatigue. And I told my mom, I said, I'm not the superhero I once was, right? Like, I was able to do so many more things when I was physically more able. I'm healthy now. My psoriasis is controlled, and so is my pain, and so is my fatigue. But, it's really interesting to see how we end up taking on a lot of the superhero elements ourselves, right? Like, for me, I've always wanted to be a superhero, right? I'm starting a new project on homelessness because of that. I'm well known in the literature internationally as an environmental politics scholar, as a waste scholar, as a water scholar. But now I'm doing work on homelessness because I think somebody needs to do something, right? Like, I feel so so urged and so energized and empowered now that I'm healthy again to look at ways in which we can rehouse people, right? Like, the housing crisis and the homelessness crisis in my hometown in Vancouver is just as bad as, I think, in Seattle, right? Like, where you're based. So I'm deviating from environmental politics because, again, I feel a superhero and I feel like, people need me, and if I can help, I will do it.
What you're describing reminds me a lot of, I think it's an Alan Moore book, Halo Jones.
Yeah.
So Halo, like, part of her deal is she's living in very difficult circumstances, but I think it's in one of the later books, she has this just like throwaway line where people talk about her as being a hero, and she's like, well, anybody could have done it. And, it's kind of said with some irony, because she's accomplished these amazing things, but also she's just a person. And it's amazing what people can be capable of. Like you said, you were looking at this problem of homelessness and you're like, somebody's got to do something. Well, why not you?
Exactly. That's what I thought, right? So, and this does relate to my childhood dream, right? I've always loved being a superhero, right? And now I'm a different kind of superhero, right? I'm the kind of person who, or the kind of superhero who, uses his brain to solve world complex problems. That's what I do. And it's something that originated in comics and originated in my love for everything that has to do with superpowers and so on. Despite the state of the world, we still need superheroes, and we still need comics, and we still need to look at the world through the eyes of art and cinema, movies, TV, and so on.
When you were young and discovering your love of superheroes, did you have superhero costumes? Did you dress up as any particular figures?
Oh,
do you continue to do that to this day?
I have a really funny story. I thought I was Batman. So I actually made a costume, and because I was too little, I was not allowed to, drive at the time, at the age that I decided to become Batman. I used my motorcycle. So I actually made, Batgirl is the one who has a motorcycle, a Batcycle. But now I thought, well, I'm Batboy, but I don't have, a car, because my parents will never allow me to drive a car right now. But so I ended up, making a costume and driving around my parents', neighborhood, sort of trying to see if there was any crime. My parents knew that I was very crazy about doing that kind of thing, so they sent me to martial arts school. So I ended up doing taekwondo and street fighting and kung fu, and so that if at some point I ended up having to be a hero, I was able to do it, right? Like, it would have been really stupid if my parents decided to allow me to be bad boy and not give me the tools to do it, right? So, I trained and I became someone who was, you know, in his, you know, 12, 13, in his early teens, I was particularly able to break anybody's bones. And, you know, that I have to thank my parents for that. Because as a gay kid, you know, I knew I was gay. My parents knew that I was gay. And they knew that I needed to protect myself. But originally, they sent me to, like, taekwondo school, not because they thought I was going to get bullied, which I did, but because they thought our hero, our son wants to be a superhero, so we better equip him to be a superhero. This didn't last too little. Like, it was like a solid, you know, 3 years, 2-3 years, you know, probably from when I was, you know, 12 to about 15, I thought, this sounds fun. You know, I think the world needs heroes and my city needs heroes. So I never actually encountered a dangerous situation, but I think people thought it was funny to see me, you know, dress up in a costume and do this, which I saw that my life replicated in the movie. What's the movie with Chloe? So, young superhero, Aaron Taylor Johnston. Oh, God. What's the... Oh, Kick-Ass. Yes, the movie is called Kick-Ass.
Yes, okay.
So I saw my life, really, really depicted in Kick-Ass, you know? In Kick-Ass, the main character decides to become a superhero and, you know, he has no powers. But also, he has no training. So he meets up with, you know, Hit Girl, who actually is the daughter of an action superhero, and they both train him. It's a really good movie. And when my parents and I saw it, it's gory. It's really gory. But when my parents and I saw it, my parents were like, why do I have a, you know, flashbacks from your childhood? And I'm like, sorry, I know I should have never done this. So.
I don't know. I mean, I think that's great. Like, a lot of parents would either discourage that or certainly not put you in a, enroll you in something to, like, physically defend yourself. They'd just be like, don't get into trouble, rather than, okay, no, you take a class in, like, physical self-defense.
Yeah. I loved it. I mean, it was because I was so tiny. Like, I am now 5'11". I'm relatively, you know, tall, but at the time I was tiny. So, you know, it was so funny to see that a tiny person, very well trained, can do so much damage, right? So, and it gave me a lot of self-confidence. It really did give me self-confidence, I have to say.
So you started going to school, you're studying like a whole bunch of things, a whole bunch of topics that you're getting expertise in all over the world. Was there a point where you, like, really started to feel like, or did you have any, like, accomplishments or achievements that made you feel like, I did it, I help people, I feel like a superhero?
I think the moment where I started feeling like a superhero, which is interesting because it's a combination of my, you know, being bubbly and outgoing and well connected with my academic career, is when my blog took off. My blog is www.raulpacheco.org. And I started writing that blog because I was tired of my PhD. And then it just became a resource for people all over the world. I get dedications in doctoral dissertations and emails and texts and Facebook messages and tweets and so on. So that moment, I think, and I don't know, I think it's been happening for the last about, you know, 6 to 7 years. I really thought, yeah, I've made, well, probably 7 years, 7-8 years. I thought, yeah, I basically made it. I'm a superhero now. I'm an academic superhero now, but, you know, I'm still a superhero. And I change worlds and I save lives in the sense that I help, you know, students learn how to do their, and students and scholars, professors as well, how to do academic research more easily and more accessibly. So that made me think, yep, finally made it. I bad boy, didn't happen, you know, but yeah, you know, in a way, oh, and I actually have something that I could show you. My mom gave me this, which is a Superman ring. And this Superman ring, my mom, she gave it to me for my birthday this year. And she said, you know, this is for the Superman of academic writing. So, yep, I've made it. I have made it by hell.
That's fantastic. Tell me about the blog. Like, what are the topics that you're writing on there, and what are the things that people are able to do thanks to the stuff that you've put in front of them?
So I write a blog on basically academic writing. So I academic life in general, my blog is very much connected with the idea of trying to solve intractable resource governance problems. You know, so I talk a little bit about my research, but I also provide a lot of resources. And these resources include, you know, how to do a review of the literature, how to take notes, how to write a paper, how to write a thesis, how to, you know, make a presentation. So yeah, that kind of resources. And it's fun because that and my Twitter account have made me so happy. It's just so nice to see that you can have so much more reach through social media. I met you through social media, right? Like, yeah. So it's super fun to be doing this kind of work, right? Like, you know, yeah.
When you look at the work that you've done, the issues that you focused on seem like things that, you know, have the potential to affect like literally millions of people's lives. When you look at the world, like, do you see work that you've done, like having an impact on the great big larger world on people who, you know, you don't know them, they don't know you, but, you know, the research that you've done, the solutions that you've sought have had some sort of material change?
People have told me, you know, I got a job thanks to you, or I have completed my thesis thanks to you. So that's sort of material, but, you know, it's just nice to be able to support people and to help them when they need it. So it's more, you know, I think a lot of it is emotional support. So.
Yeah, you mentioned the, you know, helping people who are working on problems that like seem intractable, like there's limited resources and so many people, how can we possibly, you know, deal with this issue of housing or waste management or water access or whatever? Are there particular like hotspots around the world or like areas or issues that you've been focusing on where, you know, problems that seemed like they couldn't be solved or were intractable at some point are actually looking better now?
Climate change is I have a different approach to climate change. A lot of my friends say now climate change is a lot worse, so we are getting screwed and we're, you know, screwing the planet. I'm not completely convinced that, you know, they're that problematic anymore, right? Like, you know, I think we have accumulated so much knowledge about climate change that I think it's a lot easier now to look and to track it. So it's a lot more tractable rather than, you know, just non-intractable. So yeah, it's complicated. I think it's very complicated. But, you know, water, I think it has become more tractable. Solid waste itself. I'm a chemical engineer originally. Before my degree in social sciences, my PhD degree is in social sciences, I'm a chemical engineer. So just seeing that the engineering side has really improved has changed the way in which I think about the intractability of these problems. I think they're a lot more tractable now. So in a way, we're a lot more superheroes.
That is really encouraging to hear. I mean, especially around climate change, which it just seems like we're moving towards doom continually. But it sounds like the knowledge that we're picking up at least means that solutions are more apparent, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, the solutions are more clear, right? Like, they're still human, right? Like, so you still need to convince people to, you know, take sustainable transportation to, you know, reduce fossil fuel consumption and so on, but it's still like there are possibilities, right? Like the possibilities are starting to open up.
Do you have things that are sort of next issues that you want to focus on or things that you're interested in that, I don't know, it's like a dream topic for you to like tackle next?
Oh, I'm in love with homelessness. It's insane. I'm not in love with homelessness.
Right? Oh,
like, you know, no, I'm not involved with the idea. I'm involved with the potential of solving it, right? Like, you know, is there a possibility that you can, you know, I don't know. It just seems so interesting. Can we give money to people and help them house themselves and help them, you know, save? So there's a recent study that I've been asked to comment on where there's a number. So it's an experiment where half the population receives money and half doesn't. And there's a very valid critique, you know. Those who receive the income, and who were homeless people actually ended up gaining stable housing and so on and improving their lives. But those who didn't, then, you know, their conditions didn't improve or didn't improve as much. And there's some very valid criticism, right? Like, this is like playing God with, you know, the lives of people who are extremely vulnerable. So I really don't know what to think right now, because homelessness is not an area where I'm an expert right now. I'm learning how to study homelessness and homelessness policy. I am an expert in water. And there was a very similar experiment in Nairobi where, you know, 50% of the treated group ended up being, their water was cut and half of them were not. So, you know, this is an experiment that seeks causality, but, you know, researchers were trying to understand if by cutting the water, people who have delinquent payments will actually end up paying. But this is like playing God, right? Like, you know, you are basically denying people from the very human right to be. So I do have questions, but I don't have the capacity to criticize this other study on experimental homelessness. But, you know, there is a possibility that it may also be very similar to the case of cutting people's water, right? So some social sciences, you know, have, and social science methods and techniques have challenges. And those challenges, again, this comes back to the original idea of superheroes. It's not as easy to be a superhero, and when you have the responsibility of an entire population, and particularly a very vulnerable one.
You know, you're not the only person that I've spoken to on the show who has had a lot of affection for Barbara Gordon and for Wonder Woman, and like these like fantastic characters. Have those been ways that you've connected with other gay people about like, have you had a shared love of these like iconic female heroes?
Well, all of my ex-boyfriends have loved Wonder Woman and so on. I actually, you know, for a very long time, and that's just because I was naive and young and stupid, I thought that was a trait, right? Like, you know, if you love Wonder Woman, you're gay, right? Like, you know, and then I became a social scientist and I said, oh God, I cannot make that generalization. But it just seemed so obvious, right? Like, you know, she's fabulous, she has a wonderful costume, and she's powerful, so, you know, why wouldn't we be interested in, like, I don't know. So all my ex-boyfriends have loved Wonder Woman, that I can say, that I can be very clear about.
Well, I think there's something really universal about, like, wanting to, I think she's a really universally appealing character, being just powerful and wonderful and beautiful, but also she's, like, motivated by love and compassion. And yeah, I think there is something, like, I think it's very easy to say, if you like Wonder Woman, then you are gay. Like, it's very tempting, like a very, I don't know, seductive statement, because I'm just thinking through my friend list right now. Like, I feel like I've had conversations about Wonder Woman with just about all of my gay friends.
Yeah. Yeah. It just seems logical, right? Like, you know, she's fabulous and she's powerful, but she's also, I think you zeroed in on why I think Wonder Woman resonates with me so much. And this may sound sappy, but she's motivated by love. I have no hate for people. I am, you know, I'm very much a lover, and she's motivated by love, and she's constructed. She's physically constructed by love. That's how she becomes a superhero. There's so much love for her in Hippolyta, the queen of the Amazons, that the goddess of love, you know, gives her her desire. Hippolyta so wants a daughter that she's able to, you know, she gives life, she gives birth in a way by molding Diana out of clay, and then, you know, Aphrodite gives her wish, which is, again, it's a wish of love.
What you're saying is really similar to the, I have been rewatching some of the Superman movies. There's a Jor-El speech at some point about how, like, they're capable of such great things. Humans are capable of such great things. They want to be good. And so anyway, what you're saying just, you know, reminds me of, like, appealing to people's best instincts and you know, the better half of human nature.
Absolutely, which, you know, Batman is still hopeful. Like, if you see the movie with Catwoman, with Anne Hathaway, I think she was the best Catwoman. Forgive me, Michelle Pfeiffer, I love you, but, you know, I think she was the best Catwoman of them all. And she said, you don't owe them anything anymore. You've given them everything. And then Batman says, no, not yet, not everything. In the end, you know, I think that's what we do, right? Like, we try to give society and humanity the best that we can. That's all we can do.
on the topic of those films, something I've been wanting to ask you, because this is an experience I have. So in addition to doing this podcast, I write about infrastructure here in Seattle a lot, and in particular water issues. And so I'm curious if when you watch movies, particularly superhero movies where, let's say, there's a secret lair in the sewers, are you going crazy, like analyzing the water systems in films?
Absolutely, which, you know, I know it's a little bit stupid, but your podcast is called The Sewers of Paris. Mm-hmm. Last year, when I was doing my sabbatical in Paris at Sorbonne Nouvelle, I was not able to visit the Sewers of Paris, which, you know, it's like insanity. I am an expert in wastewater. I'm an expert in infrastructure, in the governance of infrastructure. And I was not able to, visit the sewers of Paris. I seriously wanted to cry. So I promised my mom, in 2020, we're going to visit the sewers of Paris. They were in repair. And guess what happened? COVID happened.
Yeah. Well, they'll be waiting for it. I was there. So the podcast is named The Sewers of Paris after a gay bar in Los Angeles in the 1970s. There's a bar called The Sewers of Paris. But also, I'm also passionate about water issues and ecology and sanitation. And it's just one of those weird obsessions that I have. So I did go to visit the sewers of Paris in 2017, I think right before they close it for the renovations. So they'll be waiting. They're waiting for you now.
I really hope so. I don't know. It's just like, I don't know. And it's really funny that, you know, we are both gay and we have so many shared interests, like, you know, water and infrastructure and so on. I have a funny story. I always thought that was sort of, you know, the kind of perfect boyfriend, you know, the boyfriend who likes the same things that I like, right? So I was always looking for hot, handsome, you know, doctoral student or PhD who is gay and who is interested in water or waste or environment. And then I met a guy who studied Japanese history and fell in love. And I was like, so where is my stupid, you know, political scientist who is gay, handsome, and loves water too? He was nowhere to be found, because we look for what we think will fit, but we get what we actually need, right? So, you know, at the time, Ben was what I needed, right? And then my next fiance, my next boyfriend, was someone who did computer IT. Nothing to do with what I do. I basically have not dated myself, right? Like, I do know a few hot gay PhDs and who are professors all over the world in a lot of different universities. But then I realized that's not what I want. That's not what I'm looking for, right? Like, it's nice to see myself reflected in some way, but it's just so interesting how we end up looking for the person that we think we will love, and life throws a curve to you. I don't know if that has ever happened to you, right? Like, you know.
Oh, absolutely, for sure. So my partner and I have like some similar interests. We're both very enthusiastic about video games and superheroes and fantasy and stuff like that. But I can say with certainty that he is happy that I'm passionate about water issues, but it's not something that he is intrigued about to the degree that I am.
my ex-boyfriend was the same way, right? Like, you know, he would like send me clippings, and he would like, you know, send me photographs. Like, World Toilet Day, November 19th, it's a, you know, feast in my household. My dad, my mom, my brothers, my best friends, like everybody on World Water Day, March 22nd, and then World Toilet Day, which is November 19th, like my inbox, my text, I don't use WhatsApp, I use Telegram. Like, I get telegrams, you know, from former students, former boyfriends, for crying out loud. My ex-boyfriends send me clippings of, you know, this toilet that they saw on the street for World Toilet Day. So, it's just so interesting. I have the same experience. My ex-boyfriends are fascinated that I've done it, but I've never ended up, you know, doing the same dating anybody who has the same interests as me, which is super funny. It looks like you have the same experience as me, which, again, in social science, two instances are a pattern. This is a joke between, you know, scholars who do research methods, because obviously two instances are not a trend, are not a, you know, a pattern, but we joke about it. But yeah, I mean, there's at least two gay men who love water issues, whose partners, or in my case, former partners, are not really passionate about that topic.
Well, I think it's important to have your own space, like to have someone who appreciates what you like and you appreciate what they like, but you have your own space to make it your thing. And you don't have to share everything.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So tell me more about what's on the horizon for you. I know working on homelessness is taking up a lot of your attention. Do you have stuff coming up that you're excited to be working on? I know now is just a weird time to be working on stuff.
It's a very weird time, but I'm very excited about my book on bottled water. I'm studying bottled water from different perspectives, you know, international and domestic. So I'm very excited about submitting and you know, final draft of my book and then publishing it. And then I'm going to delve into homelessness for the next 3 to 5 years. I think I need, you know, but I approach this topic as Clark Kent, not as Superman.
That's a great way to look at it. You're there, you're doing the research, you're getting the facts, you're blending in. And then, I mean, it's only by listening that you can find solutions. So
absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. That's how I do it. So if people want to check out your blog and find you on Twitter, where should they go?
So they should go to www.raulpacheco.org. That's my blog. And my Twitter is @RaulPacheco. And I have a bazillion people who follow me on Twitter. So it's hard for me sometimes to respond to everybody, but I try. I really try. And I also have a Facebook page under Dr. Pacheco Vega. And thank you so much, Matt, for inviting me. I'm really delighted to have had this opportunity.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for chatting with me. This is such a pleasure.
Thanks to Raul for joining me, and thanks to you for listening, and thanks to everyone who makes The Sewers of Paris possible on Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/MattBaum to support the show and get backer rewards like patron-only messages, care packages in the mail, and early access to upcoming videos. And by the way, I post clips of the stuff that we talk about on each episode on Twitter and Facebook. Reach out and let me know your thoughts on the show at sewerspodcast@gmail.com. And join me for the next live stream on November 7th at 11 a.m. Pacific. Check out my YouTube series Culture Cruise for detailed explorations of queer milestones from TV and film. The theme song for The Sewers of Paris is Parisian from filmmusic.io by Kevin McLeod of Comptech.com, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 4.0. And until next time, croissant.